Chant that prayer with us.
Om Abhyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshus Shrotramato Palamindriyani Cha Sarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastvayakaranameastu Taratmani nirate yalpanishatsu dharmaste mai santu te mai santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Start with verse 4. We're going to chant verse 4 and 5. Repeat after me. Chapter 4, verse 4. Tasyaisha adeshaha.
Yare tad vidyutaha.
Vyadyutada iti.
It nyamimishad a.
It yadi daivatam.
Ata adhyatmam.
Yare tad gachati vacha. Mano manaha anena. Chaitad upasmarati. Abhikshnam sankalpaha.
Let's
do the sandhi. Atha adhyatmam. Yet etat gachati iva cha manaha anena cha etat upasmarati abhikshnam sankalpaha. First part in verse four above, Tasya eshaha adeshaha. Then it ends with iti adidaivatam. So that means the adeshaha, this teaching that also involves an analogy, a comparison. First was of Brahman, of Brahman. So first it was dealt with the simile or the comparison was in reference to the devata, so it was adidaivatam. And now another comparison, an adesha, Brahman, pratyagatma, is going to be given in reference to the individual, to the jiva. So atta now, after the first one, which is adidaivatam, now atta adhyatmam. Now this adesha of the nature of this of the self, the eye of the eye, the ear of the ear, etc. Now that is going to be given from the standpoint or focused on or located on the jiva. So yad etad. Etad means this Brahman. This Brahman. The yad means which, and then it has to be referring back to something in this case, which has been the subject of this Upanishad. This Brahman, which we have been unfolding, the Kena Upanishad has been unfolded. This Brahman, who has been under discussion, who has been the subject matter of the Pramana, of the Vedanta Pramana. So, this Brahman, gachati iva cha manaha. The mind, the manas, the mind means the vrittis. They go toward, they go toward that Brahman, which has been under discussion. And then it says, if you say gachati eva, gachati means it goes. So what goes, manaha gachati eva, the mind as though goes toward that Brahman, which is being revealed by the Upanishads. Eva is an important word. Then it says, anena cha etat upasmarati. And by that mind, anena, that'd be manasa anena, by that mind, cha, and by that mind, tat upasmarati, with that mind, you can see by that mind, with that mind, there's upasmarati. Upasmarati means nididhyasana. I'll have to unfold this, but just for now, smriti means to remember. Remember means to bring a vritti in, which is upa. Upa means near. So that means nididhyasana, where I'm directing my mind toward the self. Okay. So upasmarati. Upasmarati, as we'll see, it can also stand for mananam, doing manana. So far it says, and by this mind, which is naturally going toward the self, as this teaching proceeds, this mind then contemplates this nididhyasana on that self. And then it says, abhikshnam sankalpaha. There's a cha understood there. Abhikshnam means always, constantly, there is that sankalpa. Sankalpa here is in as we'll see, it is also nididhyasana, but it's a constantly recurring sankalpa. Okay. That's the verse, but it all has to be unfolded because it's very terse. So, there's a lot of the different means of knowledge here also. So. Just very naturally speaking, when you're coming to gain self-knowledge and you're listening to the Upanishad, the unfoldment of the Upanishad, where everything is directed toward Brahman, and Brahman is what you want to know, the Pratyagatma, this innermost self, you want to recognize as Brahman. So that's the Tatparya, the Mahavakya is the Tatparya, really the essential meaning. Tatparya means the essential meaning, the purpose, the essence of what the Upanishad is about, which is the Mahavakya, that thou art, you are Brahman. And so now, as this teaching is proceeding between teacher and student, the mind is naturally going to be going toward the Brahman, which is being unfolded, which is being revealed. In all of using all of these different teaching methodologies, the mind naturally is going to, in one way or another, go toward the self, be directed toward the self. So here it says, the mind as though goes toward the self. As though the mind is something that can reach the self. Okay. So there's some unfoldment that has to be here. So what is actually meant there by the mind? Because there's eva there. The mind as though goes toward the self. It's a couple of things. One is the most obvious, that the mind, neither the mind nor speech or any of the sense organs, can objectify the self. And so when we say the mind, eva, as though goes toward the self, it's because the mind itself and the sense organs have no possibility of objectifying something that is not objectifiable. It's not objectifiable because there's no nama-rupa there. There's no name and form. There's no change. There's nothing to hang for the mind to hang on to. That's one. Not objectifiable as an object. And then the other situation is that it's true it is not objectifiable by the object as an object, but also the self is already objectified by its nature as being self-evident. So consciousness, the me, this conscious being, is already a self-evident fact experientially. This is the important recognition that all the Upanishads are talking about continually in different ways. The Atma, this Pratyagatma, this innermost self, we need to discover is Brahman. And in the discovery of Brahman, it means that this me, that right now, until I have self-knowledge, this self-evident me is, because of self-ignorance, mistaken to be one with you parties, one with the body, mind, sense organs. And so because of that ignorance, this self-evident me that is Brahman already, has always been Brahman, always will be Brahman, because of self-ignorance, the self-evident me is taken to be the body, mind, sense organs. And that's because these body, mind, sense organs are called upadis. That's why we call them an upadi, because they reflect, because of the sattva, they reflect consciousness in from the standpoint of themselves. And so that in such a way that allows the ahankara to land on them. So we'll just run through this again. This physical body, because of the tuak, because of the sense of touch, enjoys consciousness. There's nothing to tell me that the consciousness which this body enjoys is not me, because I am that consciousness. So the sense organs also enjoy consciousness. I'm a conscious being, my body, I'm a conscious being, my sense organs, they are conscious, and because of them I'm able to see and to hear. You know, they exist and they are conscious. And then my mind, of course, and all the different aspects of my mind, they exist. It exists, it is conscious. Every one of my vrittis it enjoys consciousness. Now, I am a conscious being. These things are all conscious beings, so this is all me. So therefore, this is what we call karya karana sangata. The karya is the sukshma sharira, the subtle body. That is the karana. Karana means the cause, and the karya is the physical body is the effect. Because of my karma and all of that is the reason that I take this body. So this is the effect of the subtle body, which has accrued all this punya and papa. So they call it the karya karana sangata. Sangata means this collection. This body, mind, sense organs has so many parts. It's a collection, you know, of the subtle and the physical and everything that makes up the subtle and everything that makes up the physical. So this karya karana sangata, every single part of it is an upadi. Because my ahankara, this I notion, can land on any part of it as either me or mine. Okay, I am this body. You can also say, I am this body, and can give all kinds of qualities for the body. They all belong to you. And so this identification is something that I take for granted for a good reason, because being upadis, they enjoy consciousness, and because they enjoy consciousness, this I notion lands on them. It makes complete self sense until we hold up a mirror to that whole thing, a pramana to it. The other thing is that the self that I am, which I now, because of self-ignorance, have superimposed on these upadis, the body, mind, sense organs, it is already present. It is here as conscious being. Okay? So conscious being means I am self-evident. Self-evident means I don't need a pramana to light me up. I am the light. You know, what the pramana does is kind of carry that consciousness around with it. Like if I, with my eyes, I look at a form over there, that form is known, reflects consciousness in its knownness only because of my sense organs. It's not standing there as a self-evident object. And there is no self-evident object in the world. Everything requires a pramana, a means of knowledge, except for the luminary itself. And I am that luminary. Okay? That being the case, whether I'm an ajnani or a jnani, I don't require a pramana for my own self-experience. The me does not require a pramana to be lit up. Okay? And so that being the case, say even if my mind is directed toward me. Okay? I'm talking no knowledge or with knowledge, it doesn't make any difference. The pramana, where it's directed, right, is going to be trying to objectify something. So with the pramanas I have available to me, all of them, they're already programmed to go outward. They don't have the capacity to as though go inward or to land on myself. And they don't need to. I'm not their vishya. I'm not their field of experience. Okay, but now say you're all mumukshus and you've come to the teacher to gain self-knowledge, to know the self, self-knowledge. I want to know myself, or I want to know myself as Brahman, whatever. What happens now is as the teaching takes place and the pramanas that we utilize are functioning, your mind, the mind then will naturally direct itself with the use of the pramanas that we're utilizing, the viveka, using the viveka, the seer-seeing differentiation, even this ear of the ear is directing inward into the ear instead of outward. So all of the pramanas that we're using are turning the attention of the mind as though inward toward Brahman itself, toward the consciousness itself. So now, here the mind is directed now in as though inward toward the self. Now this is an unusual situation because the mind is now being directed toward the self, which is the luminary that illumines it. So it's an odd situation. In every other situation, except when we're gaining this knowledge through a pramana, the mind is directed outward, right? By any of our sense organs, it's directed outward. And then we gain a vritti of whatever that we're looking at. So say the mind is directed outward to look at, for instance, a rose. It's directed outward to see a rose. So then what happens is through my eyes, and it can even be my ears through the scent, it's directed outward to see a rose, which then gives the mind, using the so sense organs, it gives the mind a vritti, a thought modification of the rose. This is what we're used to. Okay, rose stands for anything and everything that can be objectified. So now we have a vritti of the rose, and once that vritti is there, the consciousness, the conscious being, me, you know, the very, what do you call the very content, the adhishtana of the vritti, illumines the rose in the form of, I know the rose. Yeah. Because consciousness is there now, to illumine the vritti, the sensation is, I know the rose. So the vritti first has to come in with the rose. So I have a vritti of the rose, and as it comes, the vritti comes in, then the rose is known. Does that make sense? It's just kind of breaking the thing into pieces and parts. When my sense organs or mind are directed outward would even be any type of imagination or any type of meditative experience, which in my own mind is kind of directed, I'm directing the mind towards something, towards some sort of experience. Then what happens is I gain now a subject object. Well, first I gain the vritti. Clear? Like I said, let's use the rose. I direct my sense organs toward the rose. I gain a vritti of the rose. Now, that vritti is called vritti vyapti. There's going to be two technical terms here. Gaining the vritti through some source, any type of objective, subject-object objectification is called vritti vyapti. Right? So my mind goes out, through my sense organs, lands on the rose. I get an image of the rose in my mind. So the mind has as though pervaded the rose and given me the rose image. We're never seeing the actual rose. We're seeing a vritti of the rose, which is sattva. That's clear, right? How can we see the actual rose? You have to see the rose in your mind in the form of a vritti. Okay, so now I have the vritti, and as soon as I have the vritti, then, because of consciousness, I become the knower of the rose. From within duality, that's how we talk. Now I know the rose once I have the vritti. Without the vritti, I can't know the rose. So that first action is called vritti vyapti. The mind pervades the rose, gains a vritti of the rose, that, and then I become, because of that, I become the knower of the rose. Just to understand one more step there. Say the rose is there, but I don't have a vritti vyapti. I don't gain the vritti of the rose. Then is the rose known? Say no. It requires the vritti to be known, right? How would the nose be a rose be known without the vritti? And so you're dependent on the rose. The knownness of the rose is dependent upon your sense organs, or your eyes in this case, to gain a vritti of the rose, which is then objectified. Subject to object, the rose becomes known. That's how we do everything in the world. That's it, basically. That's it because we have so many means of knowledge, and there's so many things here that can be known. And all of them enjoy a subject-object relationship. Why? because none of these things that exist within Maya, within Mithya, are self-evident. They're not shining consciousness. Consciousness is the Adhishtana. It's the Adhishtana of all of these Nama-Rupas of Maya itself. And so, now there's another little point here. In order for the rose to be known, right, you have to be there as the knower. There needs to be a knower-known relationship. So here you are as the knower, and here the rose is. And so you, the jiva, with your sense organs, right, gaini vritti, point with your mind, with the sense organs pointed at the rose, you, the jiva here, gains a vritti of the rose, which is illumined by consciousness. Therefore, you become the knower of the rose, because you're the one that sent the sense organs over to the rose, got back the vritti, and when it came back, the vritti is known because of you. You are the conscious being. So you become the knower of the rose. Okay. So now we have these two functions, vritti vyapti and pala vyapti. Good. Now with self-knowledge, this is not what happens. And the issue here is that this is the only way we know to know. Because in terms of knowing anything within Maya, it always breaks down into this subject-object relationship, because nothing here is self-evident. It requires a vritti which has for its adhishtana consciousness in order for it to be known. And so that's how we know everything in the world. There's no exception, really. You know? Even when you have a vritti that's brought about by, say, your imagination, still, for you, that vritti is known. There's a subject-object differentiation. Even though there's no sense organs involved, there's just the vritti itself, which has a content, and that content must be illumined by consciousness. Because the mind also, the sattva also, is not self-evident. It's only a reflector. Sattva, rajas, tamas, they're all mithya, they're all maya. None of them is self-evident. None of them exists. In fact, conscious being is the only existence that is here. You can't objectify existence. You can't objectify consciousness. We've been through this many times, but just to throw a couple of reminders. For something to exist, right, to say this thing is in its own right, that means it can't be bordered by non-existence. It cannot be subject to change. Because if it's subject to change, it has nothing on either side of it. So you can go into an infinite regress trying to find, finally, that one thing that has no beginning and no end. So that infinite regress continues because there's no end to the size of the creation. So one thing depends upon another, depends upon another, depends on another. And you can finally end up in saying, okay, what does space depend upon? What does space depend upon? You know? How can you go more subtle than space? Well, you have to say, well, space depends upon my mind. In fact, there's a thing in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. I'll just tell you that little story because it's relevant here. There's a story. It's by maybe Maitreya Yajnavalkya, Yajnavalkya and Maitreya. I don't remember who the rishi is, but his wife, I think it's Maitreya, wants to gain knowledge. He's going to take off and become a sannyasi. You know, and his wife wants to gain self-knowledge. And so he gives her this wonderful teaching. And he asks her, where are you sitting right now? And she says, I'm sitting in your kutir, in the front of your kutir. And where is the kutir? The kutir is in Rishikesh. Where is Rishikesh? Where is Rishikesh located? Rishikesh is located in India. Where is India located? India is located on the earth. Where is the earth located? So she thinks, she said, well, the earth is located in space. Okay. And then he goes, where is space located? That's harder. Where is space located? And so what she says is, space is located in my mind. Okay. Because there's nothing beyond space, really. So space is located in my mind. This is how far she got. And then the Rishi says, where is your mind located? And she goes, in my body. Yes, it's located here in my body. Where is your body located? Sitting here. In Rishikesh. So we go through the whole thing again. And then when she gets back to, it's all in my mind. Where's my mind located? You know, where's my mind located? The mind is in yourself. The mind is located or has for its container only the Atma, the Adhishtana, being itself, Satchit itself. Otherwise you go into an infinite, you know, circle, chakra. You can't get out of that chakra. But it's because that there's a fallacious thinking there. All of these experiences, you can put one and the next into the other and then to the other in terms of location. But in the end, you have to get down to, you know, really, if you say, because of what you know right now, if you say, well, where is the mind located? If you don't know anything, you'll say, well, it's located in the body. Where else are you going to say? You know, it's the sukshma sharira is located in my body, and you go into this chakra. But actually, the mind is located in me. I am its being. I am the conscious being, which is the very adhishtana of the mind. I am the conscious being, in fact, which is the adhishtana of the sense organs. I'm the conscious being that is the adhishtana of the body. I'm the conscious being that is the adhishtana of everything that is, because I am the existence itself. I am existence itself. Nothing can be taken away from me. So existence can't be taken away from me because I'm not within space and time. Right? I can't be objectified within space and time. So in the end, with this particular teaching methodology, you're left with yourself just as existence because you can't go beyond existence. What is the existence located in? Existence doesn't need to be located in anything. It is the adhishtana. Well, existence is located in existence, right? You can't go back out into the creation because the creation is mithya. It all comes into being and goes out of being. It has no existence. None. And so the existence that it enjoys has to land upon existence itself. And existence itself is my amness. This me, when I say I am, you are, he sure it is. This is only being, it's only existence. And there's absolutely nothing that is away from that. And that existence, so look at it like this too. If I say, there is nothing that can be away from existence, because then it would not exist. Simple. So anything here, if it's away from existence, you know, then it's gone. It's just simply gone. So as the adhishtana, I am the being of everything that is, and then the question is, does being enjoy? Does everything have to have being? And what if you say no? Then it's not here anymore. It either has been or it doesn't. But upon analysis, actually, nothing has been because it comes into being and goes out of being because it changes, and yet everything has been. And it's the same for me. Everything about this, my upadis, the body, the mind, the sense organs, the thoughts, the moods, emotions, come into being and go out of being. Like everything else in the creation. And they have no existence of their own because they come into being and go out of being. But you know what? For me, that is totally irrelevant. I never even have to think about that because I am the adhishtana. Now, if something else was the adhishtana, you know, that might be a different sort of experience, but there can't be something else that's the adhishtana because existence itself is not subject to time, nor can it be objectified. And also the existence is consciousness, which is not subject to time, nor can it be objectified. So the Satchit is what is actually here and which absolutely everything enjoys as its self, as its being, without any type of distance, because even the slightest amount of separation from being would mean everything's in being except for this little thing over here that can't be known and can't exist because it's separate from existence. That's what we mean by mitya. Mitya, by something being the adhishtana of mitya, means there is no gap at all. There can be no gap because the gap would be a gap of non-existence. And so you can't have being a gap and then other things that enjoy being. Once you've made that gap, even mentally, then those things aren't there anymore because they don't have existence. So here, this is true looking outward to all of these nama-rupas, names and forms, but this is outward also. Your body, your mind, your sense organs, that's all looking outward. This body, mind, sense organs comes into being and goes out of being, just like everything else. And just like everything else, it enjoys an adhishtana. The adhishtana, which is what? Which is me, my own, the conscious being which I am. The ear of the ear, the eye of the eye, etc. The mind of the mind. That is me. And that is the me that is the one non-dual adhishtana of everything. Because from the standpoint of me, there is no time or space. I'm the adhishtana of time and space itself. You know, time and space is itself luminous. You're not going to say, oh, when we do this whole analysis, we come up with the fact that it is space that is consciousness. If space is consciousness, then what about when you close your eyes? If you close your eyes, then that consciousness of space should still be there because it's guna. You know? What if you go into deep sleep? Space and consciousness are not there from the standpoint of deep sleep. If it's what it is, if, like, say, for instance, consciousness is space, space is consciousness, then no matter what, space is consciousness. That's its nature. We don't even think like that. But we find ways to exclude ourselves from myself being that conscious being, which is the adhishtana of everything. If I'm the adhishtana of everything, the consciousness which everything enjoys, the existence which everything enjoys, then, and now the problem is, I need to know this self. I need to know me. I want to know who I am. And none of my upadis, my mind or sense organs, can give me this knowledge because they can't turn around and look at me. Right? The mind can't itself turn around and look at me because I'm the one that gives it the power to know. So it can't get beyond me, turn around, and look at me as an object. So the ways that we know how to know what we know only work within the creation. They don't work for me. And that's why in this example now they say the mind as though goes toward me. Because as the teaching continues, and your mind, we're actually directing your mind toward the self, what actually is happening? Well, we can say as the mind turns its attention, we'll change the language a little bit, turns its attention, the sattva mind turns its attention to the adhishtana, to myself, which is the adhishtana. I am the adhishtana, but there's another thing. I am the adhishtana not for myself. I am the adhishtana for the mind and the body and the sense organs and the whole creation. I am the self-evident sat-chit which my mind enjoys, the sense organs enjoy, this body enjoys, the world enjoys. Okay, so now, when I direct your mind toward that self, I am directing the mind toward the adhishtana of the mind, right? The one because of whom the mind is. So as the mind, as this vritti is directed toward myself, it itself now is turning away from any type of objectification. But if I turn my mind toward conscious being itself, there's no thing that I'm objectifying. And so then that vritti, which is now turned toward myself, what is its content? What is the content of that vritti? Well, the content is, in a sense, the one who illumines it. The consciousness, which is its adhishtana, is as though the content of the vritti. And then what happens? So this is how we talk about this. In terms of gaining knowledge out here, the mind lands on the object, forms a vritti, and then consciousness illumines it. Right? So subject-object. In this case, the mind tries to go to the self, but it's never away from the self to go to the self. The mind's trying to go to the self is going to the self that is already there. And so what happens then is that this vritti is as though the content of the vritti is completely erased. And what is the experience then? Only the adhishtana. Only the adhishtana. Now this, what we call palavyapti of the adhishtana or conscious being coming and illumining the vritti is not going to happen. So the vritti vyapti as though happens. But the palavyapti can't happen. So let me remind you about these terms again. The vritti vyapti is when your mind lands upon, using your sense organs or means of knowledge, it lands upon an object, and therefore you gain a vritti of that object. So we say the rose vritti. So the rose vritti is there, that's called vritti vyapti. The vritti pervades the rose. Then the rose vritti is there, and that rose vritti is illumined by consciousness. That's what we call palavyapti. Another way of saying it is, now I become a knower of the rose. So this subject-object relationship is there, because that which is not self-evident is illumined by that which is self-evident. And so as long as I'm illumining something that itself is not self-evident, then I become the knower of this thing that the mind gains a vritti of, and that vritti is reflected in consciousness, so I have a subject-object relationship. That's how we know in the world. But here, the mind is being directed toward the one that illumines it. And it's not just, this is the thing, it's not as like the sun illumining the earth or something. The very adhishtana of the mind is the self. And so if the self is the adhishtana of the mind, what is the distance between the self and the mind? So let's go back to this. Between what is satyam and mithya, what is the distance between the clay and the pot? Satyam is the clay. You know, the pot is mithya, because it has no being of its own. The only reason we even acknowledge it is because we experience it. There's really nothing there but clay. What is the distance between the desk and the wood? There is no distance. In fact, really, there's only wood there. Right? So not only no distance, it's more dire. I mean, it's more extreme than that. It's hard to even get any idea, any concept of what is actually there when somebody asks a question like that. You usually just don't even think about it. But if you ask the question, there's really only wood there. And then can't the desk have a little distance from the wood? And you have to say, no, it can't, actually. Well, what about the pot? Let's make the pot a little distance from the clay. The pot, the clay, the ocean wave, the ocean and the waves with the water. There is no distance at all. And in fact, all of these things that we're labeling, pot, desk, wave, ocean with the water, you can't say they exist, but you can't say you don't experience them. And so that's why we call it mithya. Because really, they have no independent being whatsoever. And so now this mind, which is mithya, is objectifying something else that is mithya. Both the mind depends upon the adhishtana, and the rose depends upon conscious being. Both of them depend upon conscious being. And so within this mithya world, we have a knower and a known. Okay? Because of having a vritti and sense organs, that becomes the know and this becomes the known. But actually, both of them are equally mithya. The knowing, the knower, the knowing and the known are just have one adhishtana, which is me, which is conscious being. And so now we have to, this is the fact in the sense of myself is conscious being. I can't say, no, I'm not conscious being. You are conscious being, plus ajnanam. But the conscious being that we're talking about has got to be conscious being itself. And I, this me, is conscious being. Okay, so now we have to gain knowledge of that. How to do that? How can the mithya mind gain knowledge of its adhishtana? And so what happens? How does this work? And so because with the teaching, we're directing the mind toward the conscious being that you know that you are. But first, like in the tenth man story, we have negated every other possibility. You know the tenth man story? The old sadhu has to count all the other nine and then say, you are the tenth man. We have to objectify everything else to see that it enjoys a subject-object relationship. It all has to be objectified. And then you can recognize the one who's as though left standing. The one left standing is just simply me. And how do I recognize that too? When the mind is directed now, after having eliminated all of the other things that can be objectified, all of the upadis and the universe itself, in fact, space, time, everything, then this mind is directed toward the luminary, consciousness itself. And consciousness is the one because of which the vritti is known. And so when that takes place, there's not going to be any more any palavyapti, somebody who now knows the self. That's completely gone. Now all there's going to be is the vritti that has been overwhelmed by the self. The vritti is still there, right? But it's been overwhelmed by the self. Its content is only the self. Its content is not a knower. There's no knower known there because the vritti has no object, is not objectifying anything. And so the self that is its luminary is the self now that is its content. So no subject-object relationship is there. No objectification of anything within Maya is there. What is actually there? Only me. That's it. It's called an akanda akara vritti. So this is how knowledge takes place, even though we say Eva, even though the mind can't land on the self because it already is the self. It's like the pot. Let's let the pot do all of this work. It's a mumukshu pot. Let's let the pot land on the clay. How can it do that? It's already completely clay. So where's the landing? There's no landing, you know. Let the pot direct itself toward the clay. How can it do that? You know, it already is the content that it's trying to discover. And so that's why they say this as though. Now you can see if this is clear. We say, I am the mind of the mind, or the ear of the ear, or the speech of the speech, or the sound of the sound, you know, or the eyes, eye of the eye. It's because there is no distance whatsoever between the eye and the self, or the ear and the self, or the mind and the self, for any of us, because the self is the adhishtana, and this world has no independent being whatsoever. So to understand this in a way that you actually see it over and over again, the mithyatva of this creation and what it means for it to be mithya, has to be revealed again and again and again, because what is mithya, which is all of this, has no being at all. It's all clay pot all the way. And that means, really, your self-experience is pervasive, we say pervasive from the standpoint of the Maya, but the me is something that is not contained by the upadhi. I am contained from the standpoint of the upadhi, because from the standpoint of the upadhi, the mind, body, mind, sense organs, I am the conscious being, because I am. But that's why the Rishi said, you know, if you think you know the Brahman as abiding in you, you know very little. But what you know is correct. I am the conscious being. This body is a conscious being. My mind is a conscious being. The sense organs are conscious being. Make anything up. And whatever you make up, that also is conscious being. Because unless it's conscious being, unless it exists, unless it has been, it's not here. And anything that exists within samsara is coming into being and going out of being, it has no being. And yet the whole creation inside and out has been. Even though all of it is coming into being and going out of being, it's coming into me, going out of me, coming into me, going out of, I am its adhishtana. And if I'm the adhishtana, if I understand that there can be no distance whatsoever between me and the name and form that I'm experiencing, I am its one and only content, or it doesn't exist. To argue with that, you have to somehow try to establish that being, that the nama-rupa, the name and form, within samsara, that means within all of duality, somehow has existence in its own right. For that to happen, it has to be free from change. Because if any part of it changes, then it comes into existence and goes out of existence. And all those tons of logic we can use for that. So that if it doesn't have existence, then you are its existence. Not you are shining upon it or beaming existence to it. You're not shining upon it. You're not beaming the existence. You are its existence. You are that. And so that's what has to be recognized. It's a very obvious, it's very simple, so simple. So Swamiji says, it's too simple, that's the problem. So simple. Once you know, just like even with Einstein, you know, Einstein would say, all of his discoveries, once he knew them, they were so simple. They were so clean, so obvious, so beautiful, you know. But getting there is another thing. The recognition takes a while because we ourselves, in terms of the upadis, are maya. We are the one that needs to gain the knowledge is itself mitya. The self doesn't, your being doesn't need any knowledge at all. You're non-dual. You're self-evident. Everything is fine. All of the problems belong to maya. All of your emotions, maya, mitya. All of your thoughts, all of your confusions, all of your unhappiness, all of your raga dvesha. It's all maya. It's all mitya. So it's just nice of Ishwara. Not that Ishwara did it either. Ishwara didn't think, create, let's see, how should we create this creation? There's no creation, really. There's the manifestation of the infinite knowledge, which is natural to the maya upadhi that is located there as an incidental attribute of the self. There's no like grandfather Ishwara, you know, saying, let's create the creation like this. Now, this creation is the manifestation of Ishwara. It's beginningless. There's not a beginning here. To have a beginning, you have to be within time. And if you're within time, it's already begun. Right? If you're within time, you already have duality. What about when we're talking about the creation? The creation, space, air, fire, water, earth. You know how we get around all of that? We think that space is beginningless. Just space. There's space there, and then out of space, this and that happened. But from our standpoint, from the standpoint of the Vedas, space itself is part of the creation. Space, air, fire, water, earth, and all of the elementals. How to think about that? What if you have an imagination? Five elements, elementals, sattva, rajas, tamas, pervading all of it. It doesn't make it a dream. Five elements, elementals, space, air, fire, water, earth, pervading it. A giant story going on. imagination, a story going on. Creation, a story going on. Now we have to recognize that I am the self of the story. I am the Maya. I am the Maya in the sense that the Maya that is an incidental attribute of my own being. And I have that as Ishwara, and I have that power also as a Jiva in terms of my imagination and in my, you know, and my projection and my dreaming. These are all my vibhutis. I have all of that. Ishwara has it in full measure. I have it in a little measure because this body, mind, sense organs is made of the same stuff that Ishwara is made of. It's the same material. No. So. We still have a little more to go. We'll do it. We'll see you next time. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Rupyo Namaha Hari Om.